Hui and Lannan hurried to the command position at the center of the line, shrugging off their cloaks and flexing cold muscles. Hui looked out across the sleeping town, and the smell of it was wood smoke and cooking food and human excrement, a great sour smell of humanity that wrinkled his nostrils. The town was silent, except for the lonely barking of a cur and the petulant wail of a sleepless baby. Hui said softly, "The time is now," and Lannan nodded. Hui turned and gave the orders to one of his centurions, and the man stooped over a clay firepot and blew flame to life on the bunch of pitch-dipped rags that tipped the signal arrow. When the flame had caught and blossomed, he notched the arrow and loosed it in a high arching parabola against the dark sky. From along the line the signal was repeated, orange flame soaring briefly in the darkness. But the silence was unbroken, and the town slept on. "They have no guard set, no picket, nothing," Lannan remarked scornfully. "They are barbarians," Hui pointed out mildly.
"They deserve slavery," Lannan said.
"They will fare better as slaves than free men," Hui agreed. "We will dress them and feed them and show them the true gods." Lannan nodded. "Yes, we've come to lead them out of the darkness and into the sun." And he shifted the heavy slaving club into his right hand. From the east, appearing suddenly out of the edge of the forest, stampeded a mass of bellowing, maddened cattle. On their horns burnt torches of pitch and grass. Behind them they dragged flaming, dry branches, and they were driven by their own terror and by a line of yelling, whooping warriors. The whole scene was hellish, with dust, smoke, and flame. The line of cattle crashed into the town, knocking down the flimsy grass huts, leaving fire to bloom and spread in their wake, trampling the sleep-drugged, naked Vendi that stumbled into their path. Behind them ran the warriors, clubbing down the survivors and leaving them lying in the hoof-churned dust. Hui heard a steady, climbing wail from the town, the sound of thousands of terrified voices. He heard the drumming of running hooves and saw the explosions of yellow flame and sparks mount into the night sky as the tinder-dry huts burnt. "Hold your line," he called to the men in the darkness around him. "Leave no gaps in the net for the fish to slip through." The night was filled with movement, sound, and flame. The flame spread quickly, lighting the scene with a great flickering orange light. And then the Vendi darted and milled and screamed as the grim line of marauders moved down upon them. The clubs rose and fell, and the sound of the blows against bone was that of woodsmen working in a forest. They fell black and naked, and lay in the glaring firelight, or crawled and wriggled and wailed. One woman with her infant clutched to her breast saw the relentless line bearing down on her, and she whirled like a doe startled from covert, and ran into the tall, bellowing flames of burning thatch. She burnt like a torch, her hair exploding, and she screamed once and then fell, scorched and unrecognizable, into the flames. Hughie saw it, and his blood madness cooled, congealing into revulsion and disgust. "Hold! Hold!" he shouted. "Lighten your blows!" And slowly, out of this terrible confusion, order emerged. The slave masters were there, ordering the captives into squatting lines. The infantry swept the town clear, and the flames burnt themselves out, leaving only black mounds of smoking ash. The dawn came up, a red and angry dawn, across which drifted banks of dark smoke. When Hui led the praise chant to Baal, the cries and wailing of the captives rose with the voice of the legion. Hui hurried through the devastation, ordering and organizing the retreat. Already two cohorts, under the young Bakmor, had started back towards the Great River, driving an uncounted herd of captured cattle before them. Hui guessed there might be as many as 20,000 head of the scrubby little beasts. Backmore had Hui's orders to swim the cattle across the river and return immediately to cover the retreat. Now his concern was to get the slow, unwieldy columns of slaves moving. The approach march that his legion had made in half a day and night would surely take 2 or 3 days on the return. The newly captured slaves must be chained, and unaccustomed to their bonds they would move only slowly, retarding the march. Every hour's delay was dangerous, and would make the heavily encumbered legion more vulnerable to attack or reprisal. One of his centurions accosted him, his tunic blackened with smoke and his beard singed. "My lord."
"What is it?"
"The slaves. There are few young men amongst them." Hui turned to examine one of the masses of squatting black humanity. They were festooned with the light marching chains, shackled at the neck like hunting dogs in leash.
"Yes."
He saw it now. They were mostly women and immature youths. The slave masters had weeded out the old and infirm. But there were very few men of warrior age and status. Hui pricked a bright-looking youngster from the squatting ranks and spoke to him in the vernacular. "Where are the warriors?" The youth looked startled at being addressed in his own language, but he dropped his eyes suddenly and wouldn't answer. The centurion half drew his sword, and at the scrape of steel in the scabbard, the boy glanced up fearfully. "A drop more blood will mean nothing," Hughie warned him, and the boy hesitated before replying. "They've gone to the north to hunt the buffalo."
"When will they return?" Hughie demanded.
"I do not know," the slave shrugged expressively. And Hui now had a more telling reason for haste. The fighting regiments of the Vendi were intact, and this towering beacon of smoke would draw them as meat draws the vultures. "Get them up and moving," he ordered the centurion, and hurried away. Lannan came out of the smoke, followed by his armor-bearers and men-at-arms. One glance at his face was enough to warn Hui, for it was flushed and scowling.
"Did you order the slave masters to spare those they reject?"
"Yes, sire." Suddenly Hui was impatient with the king's rages and tantrums. There were more important matters to occupy him now.
"By what authority?" Lannan demanded.
"By the authority of a commander of a royal legion in the field," Hui answered him.
"I commanded a burning."
"But not a massacre of the aged and infirm."
"I want the tribes to know that Lannan Hyckinus passed this way."
"I leave witnesses to it," Hui told him shortly. "If these old ones would burden us, will they not also be a burden upon their tribe?" Lannan drew himself up. Hui saw his rage boil over, and he took Lannan's arm in unexpectedly conspiratorial grip. "Majesty, there is something of importance I must tell you." And before Lannan could give vent to his rage, Hui had led him aside. "The regiments of Vendi have escaped us. They are in the field and out in battle array." Lannan's rage was forgotten. "How close are they?"
"I do not know, except that the longer we talk, the closer they come."
It was past noon before the long files of shuffling slaves were all tallied and moving. The slave masters reported in to Hui's command post, and the final count was almost 22,000 human beings. Despite Hui's orders to keep the column bunched and under control, the files of chained Vendi stretched over 4 miles, and their pace was that of the slowest. At a labored crawl, like a crippled centipede, they wound through the hills and down into the bad, broken ground of the valley bottom. The first attack hit them a little after midnight on the first night.
It came as a shock to Hui, for although he had taken every precaution for a night camp in enemy territory, he'd not expected anything like this from the tribes. A few sentries with slit throats, a flight of arrows from ambush, even a swift rush and withdrawal at some weak spot along the line, but not a full-scale night attack which showed every evidence of planning and control, and which was pressed home with murderous intent. Only training and discipline held his legion together before that howling torrent that hurled itself upon them from the darkness. For 2 hours they closed up and fought, with the trumpets blowing the standfast and the rallying cries of the centurions ringing out in the darkness. On me, the six! Steady, the six! Hold hard, the six! When the moon came out and lit the field, the attackers melted away into the forests, and Hui could stride among his cohorts and assess his position. The dead tribesmen were piled chest-deep about the square where the cohorts had stood. In the torchlight, the skirmishers were finishing the enemy wounded with quick sword thrusts, while others were tending their own wounded and laying out their dead for cremation. Hui was relieved to see how small a toll the enemy had exacted from the defense, and how grievous a price they had paid themselves. In the confusion of the battle, many of the files of slaves had responded to the calls of the attackers, and with a concerted rush had broken out of the square and escaped into the night, still linked together. But there were still more than 16,000 of them, howling with terror, hunger, and thirst. The legion lit its cremation fires in the dark and sang the praise chant to Baal on the march. Before the sun had been up an hour, it was clear what tactics the Vendi had decided upon for that day. Each feature along the route was contested by groups of archers and spearmen. They had to be laboriously dislodged, always falling back before the charges of Hui's axemen. But at the same time, the flanks of the column and the rear were harried and tested by repeated attacks in considerable strength. "I've never heard of this happening before," protested Lannan during a lull, while he unbuckled his helmet to air his sweat-sodden curls and wash his mouth out with wine. "They behave like drilled and trained troops." "It is something new," Hui agreed, as he accepted a cloth one of his armor-bearers had wetted for him. Hui's arms and face were speckled with droplets of thrown blood, and blood had dried black and crusty on the blade and shaft of the vulture axe. "They have direction and purpose. I've never known tribesmen regroup after a charge has broken them. I've never known them come back after a mauling." Lannan spat red wine upon the ground. "We may have better sport than we'd bargained for before the day is out." And he laughed with anticipation and passed the wine bowl to Hui. There was a place where the track crossed a narrow stream and then passed between two symmetrical, rounded maiden's breast hills. There was a ford at the stream, and on the approaches to it, 16 spears had been set in the earth, and spiked upon them were the severed heads of legionaries who had been with Backmore's cohorts that had gone ahead with the cattle. "Huh. Backmore has not got through unscathed either," Hughie remarked, as he watched the heads taken down and hurriedly wrapped in leather cloaks. "Oh, 16 from 1,200 is hardly a disaster to rank with Lake Trasimene," Lannan remarked easily. "And with their grisly display, they've warned us of their intention to hurl the ford. Weak tactic, Sunburn?" "Perhaps, my lord," Hui conceded. But he had noticed the faces of his men, who had seen the ragged red throats and the dull staring eyes of the trophy heads. Their stomachs had cooled a little. The ford was held, as Lannan had predicted. It was held by a force that Hui guessed was not less than twice his own. And while they attempted to hack their way through, the attacks upon the flanks and rear never let up. Twice Hui pulled his axemen and infantry out of the reddened mud of the ford to rest and reform, but by now the day was baking hot, and the legionaries were tiring. Lannan had received a spear thrust in the face, which had opened his cheek to the bone, a wound that looked uglier than it really was, and his beard was thick with blood and dust. A physician was stitching the wet lips of the wound closed when Hui joined the group around the king, and Lannan dismissed his anxious inquiry with a chuckle. "Ah, it will leave an interesting scar." And then, without moving his head, he told Hui, "I've discovered the solution to the mystery, Hui, and there it is." He pointed across the stream to the closest of the two hills. The crest was just out of random arrow range, perhaps 500 paces away. Although the slopes of the hill were forested, the crest was a dome of rounded bare granite, and upon it the dome stood a small group of men. They were gathered about a central figure. Hui would always remember him as he was that fateful noon on the hilltop beside the ford. The distance did not dwarf him, as it did the men about him. In some strange fashion it made his physical presence more imposing. He was a huge man, full head and shoulders taller than his companions. The sun shone on the oiled black muscles of his chest and arms, and a tall headdress of blue heron feathers stood wind-tossed and proud upon his head. He wore a short kilt of leopard tails around his waist, but Hui didn't need that to know he was a king. "Ah," he said softly, and he felt something stir in him, a cold sliding thing like an uncoiling snake. On the hilltop, the Vendi king made a sweeping gesture and then stabbed towards the ford with his heavy war spear. It was clearly the delivery of a command, and from the group around him a messenger broke away and raced down the slope of the hill, carrying the order. "At last, the tribes have found a leader," said Hui. "I should have guessed it earlier." "Take him for me," Lannan commanded. "I want him. Nothing else is important. Take that man for me." And Hui heard a new tone in Lannan's voice. It was not the pain of his crudely stitched cheek that made dark shadows play in the pale blue eyes. For the first time in all the years, Hui knew that Lannan was afraid.